This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Welcoming my colleague and friend Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs, returned from his native Australia, to take us to the Indian Ocean again. This time, the state of Sri Lanka, once upon a time known as Ceylon, troubled these last years because of corruption at the top for many years, having to do with Chinese money, building huge projects that nobody uses, a port nobody uses, an airport nobody uses, and then the government fled. The new government is a man named Anuradhasanayake, and he is not only 55 and vigorous looking, he also calls himself a Maoist. What does this mean in the Indian Ocean, given that the meeting of the Quad that just took place in the United States put together the Republic of India, the Dominion of Australia, and the people of the United States, a republic, along with the United Kingdom, which is a parliamentary system, heavy democracy in the Quad? Is that what we're going to see in Sri Lanka? Are the Chinese moving back in? Gregory, a very good evening to you. Sri Lanka, a small state that is right in the middle of a firefight between India and China, a potential firefight between the United States, Australia, Japan, line them up, and China. Where is Sri Lanka in this mix? Is it too early? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yes, it is too early, but not too early to say how important this is, both for India and for the People's Republic of China. As you pointed out, the incoming president, Anuradhasanayake, is from the Marxist, Maoist, Janata Vimukthi Paramuna, which is translated means the People's Liberation Front. And he has given no indication that he would increase security links with the People's Republic of China. He's also indicated, and his party has indicated, that they don't want to go ahead with the Chinese development of the port of Colombo, which is significant, but that's basically for nationalist reasons. But they will go ahead, I believe, with the restructuring of the Hambantota port and related airport, which have been Chinese financed and have been taken over by the Chinese because the Sri Lankans failed to meet their financial obligations to pay for those boondoggles. That Hambantota port and airport were built largely to create a vehicle for corruption in the earlier governments, which is largely what led to their downfall. But so that they were really a boondoggle, and the JVP didn't like it, and neither did the local population. But now we see a much more, as you say, vigorous and intelligent man coming into the presidency, and he needs to balance his relations between India and the People's Republic of China. He will give the PRC continued access to ports and the like in Sri Lanka, but not the actual home porting of the Chinese Navy vessels. But they'll be able to refuel and do all kinds of things on their way through the Indian Ocean. And that's going to be significant. What really is happening is that Beijing is gradually strengthening its position in the entire Indo-Pacific, even though its position at home is bankrupt. They're still pursuing their projection of power, and they now have potential for basing or visits or support and supply in a number of areas. Firstly, in a couple of bases in Cambodia. They've got the access to the port of Gwadar in Pakistan, which they basically financed. And, of course, they've got an overland linkage to that port of Gwadar on the Arabian Sea from Xinjiang. They've got basically good relationships with Bangladesh and even in Indonesia. So they are starting to move and consolidate their skills and presence in the Indian Ocean, and of course all the way up to Djibouti, where they have a full-blown naval base there.
The reason I'm looking very closely at this map is that this looks potentially like the kind of sovereignty that China's accustomed to turning its direction in Oceania, using soft power, bribery, influence peddling, and then in some fashion turning one of the members or several members of the legislature to favor China. Now, that all fell apart because of those white elephant projects that China financed that can't be paid for. But that doesn't mean they won't be back. Is there any offset to that in Sri Lanka, or is it going to be allowed to be vulnerable again to Chinese corruption?
Well, it certainly will be vulnerable there, and I would say that the incoming president is not immune from that himself. He is one of the richest people in Sri Lanka, despite being a Maoist and Marxist. So this is going to get fairly interesting. I think he's going to be open to Western support and Western obligations, if you like, but he doesn't want to be in a position where he's seen as subservient to India. So the key to that is going to be his ability to call on Beijing for support. But he's pragmatic. You know, his wealth shows how quote pragmatic he is in looking after his own interests and balancing himself politically. So he's going to be interesting there. What it does for China, the People's Republic of China, is that it gives them increased ability to pressure India in the event of a war between mainland China and Taiwan. At that point, you could expect the Indian armed forces to move militarily against the Chinese on the Tibetan Plateau and to move against the land bridge which the Chinese run between Xinjiang and the Pakistani port of Gwadar that would cut across that part of Pakistani-occupied Kashmir. So if the PRC is able to maintain a strong naval presence and perhaps Air Force presence in the Indian Ocean, then that will mean that the Indians can't move as freely as they would like up into the Tibetan Plateau and cut off China's supply line down into the Indian Ocean. So that's interesting. And the Chinese have said that they're prepared, if they go to war on Taiwan, they would be prepared to have a multi-front war, not just a two-front war, but a multi-front war, because they'd probably have to go to war against Japan as well, because Japan said it would support Taiwan. They would have to go to war against India and also Vietnam. Now, the question is, to what extent will Russia support them or oppose them? Because bear in mind that that President Putin in Russia has taken great umbrage to the declared intent of Xi Jinping in China to take the Russian port city of Vladivostok on the Sea of Okhotsk, that would be the end of Russia as a global power if that happened. So Russia is going to be sitting on the edge in such a conflict. And Russia, of course, is absolutely allied with India at this point because of the international north-south transport corridor starting in St. Petersburg, in other words, essentially at the Atlantic, and coming down through to the Indian Ocean, or the Indo-Pacific, with its own port terminal in the Iranian port of Bandar Abbas, and then going by sea across to Mumbai. So basically, India and Russia and Iran are absolutely linked on that, and that is of concern to China. The new president of Iran is mad at the People's Republic of China for not fulfilling any step of its obligation to commit $400 billion worth of aid and investment to Iran, and it's not never likely to. So basically, the PRC is now sort of fighting back. It's got its foothold in Cambodia, in Myanmar, in Sri Lanka in particular, and to a lesser degree in Bangladesh, although the Bangladeshis still need to counter India and Pakistan themselves. So Bangladesh is in play, I would say.
Does this check the Quad? Does this check AUKUS, Sri Lanka in the hands of the Chinese?
No, it doesn't, not entirely, because it's only a, shall we say, a commercial linkage that they have at this point and with some port visit rights. The outgoing government in Sri Lanka, although it was beholden to Beijing for many financial things, did forbid the PLA Navy, the Chinese Navy, from running operations anywhere in the exclusive economic zone of Sri Lanka. So the Sri Lankans, the previous government and this government, are playing it as safe as possible. But you have to say that the net effect of all of this is that the PRC is consolidating a position in the Indian Ocean, which does give it some capacity to make India have to ask questions before it goes to war on the Tibetan plateau.
What does Delhi want from Sri Lanka? Do they have, do they talk, or are they hostile to each other?
No, they do talk, in fact, a lot. But there's a great measure of distrust on the Sri Lankan side, and always has been, largely because of during the Congress Party rule in India under the Gandhis, we saw India putting support into the into one side or the other of the Sri Lankan civil war.
So what we have here is a balancing act that Sri Lanka is in the middle of. That suggests, of course, it's going to have its hand out. That's not a bad thing, given the scale of rioting that happened when the previous regime fled. Is it going to be developed by this new government, or is this new government more of the same in your measure, Gregory?
No, I think it's definitely knows it has to suppress a lot of the corruption and to rebuild the infrastructure, get the economy working again. There's no question about that. I think the incoming president has already committed to trying to make relations work with the International Monetary Fund and the like. So I think he's going to take a fairly sensible approach. Although he is very wealthy, he hasn't indicated that he's going to engage in the same, if you like, absolutely overt corruption that his predecessors did.
Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. There's too little time, too many villains. We're rushing to America and the United Nations, and President of Ukraine has arrived in the U.S., making stops in Pennsylvania. Why? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.